Welcome to the Ryan Massano Show, where eternal truths, divine insight, and traditional values are championed. Remember, truth is hate for those who hate the truth. So for the next 2 hours, enjoy this sanctuary of traditional values, eternal truths, and divine insights. Now here's your host, Ryan Massano.
Ist es vielleicht auch. Aber wenn ich denke, dass in der Arztpraxe viele Leute sind, die jetzt krank geworden sind, dann ist es doch sicher gut, wenn wir uns gut überlegen, was wir sollen aber nicht zu fest, wo mir ein bisschen Wärme gibt, aber nicht zu viel. Einfach gerade so, dass die Freundlichkeit, die ich überkomme, auch gegen aussen strahlt, dass ich auch freundlich sein kann. Freundlichkeit, ein Sungerliebli. Demut. Das ist ein bisschen schwierig.
Okay, so I think we are on now. Again, pardon that interruption. This is Speak Free Radio. This is the Ryan Massano Show. This is Sunday evening. The shows play on Saturday evening from 7 to 9 Pacific time, on which is going to be 10 to 12 Eastern time. On Sunday evening, it will be 6 to 8 Pacific time, which is 9 through 11 Pacific or Eastern Standard Time. So tonight, got a lot of topics planned. Look forward to the second hour. If you are calling in, that's the time to do it. Little Black Triangle on Speak Free Radio is the place. So a lot of things to talk about today. And pretty exciting show. And I definitely want to get a lot of feedback from the listeners on exactly how, what you're thinking about when we are discussing a lot of these issues. But I wanted to start off on a topic that a lot of us hear a lot about, but I don't think this is very commonly understood in America. And so I really wanted to take some time on the radio and speak about that. And that's the topic of separation of church and state. So we have often been told that there is this separation of church and state, which has been used to basically silence anyone who has a moral outlook or a religious outlook. And I think it's really important to unpack that, really do some basic research into that. Why is that? Because like it or not, we do have, we're told, you can't legislate morality. Every single time you try to say some moral principle that has lasted for thousands of years, you're told, oh, you can't legislate morality. Well, every government legislates morality. You're either legislating good morality or bad morality. So the question is, what morality is being legislated today? And anyone who understands morality and who has a conscience understands that we are under a terrible morality at the moment, and that needs to be fixed. And knowledge is power. So the more people look into the roots of a lot of these problems, then I think the sooner we'll be able to get some solutions to a lot of this. So I wanted to start out on the separation of church and state, just go ahead and discuss that. I guess even before we get into that, let's kind of like browse the headlines. I don't really think there's anything radically new in the whole World War III run up with Iran firing missiles at Israel, which we're told that 99% of them were shot down. Now, you don't know what to believe looking at this media, but obviously all the Jewish media is really excited about something. Whether the Jews run Iran or not, I'm not sure. I know they run Israel, that's for sure. But we're told 185 drones, 36 cruise missiles, 110 surface-to-surface missiles were launched at Israel, 99% shot down. And all of a sudden, it's amazing. When you do something to any other country, it's not that big of a deal. But if you do something to Israel, oh, this is serious business. It's amazing. And of course, if you don't think this will be used to justify higher gas prices, you are not smart. Of course it will. So anyways, yeah, I don't really, the Iran attacks Israel, we already know all about that. Not much to cover more on that. But the separation of church and state, I really wanted to focus on that for the entire show. So is the separation of church and state, is that in the Constitution anywhere? No, it is not. So why are we talking about that? I know it was Justice Harry Blackmun, I believe it was, who was a very radical Freemason, I believe it was. And he came up with this wild ruling on separation of church and state, which just completely messed everything up. Our nation was started by men who, some states actually had rules. You couldn't even be on a jury if you weren't a Christian. But all of a sudden here in America, we get a radical judge in place, and he starts ruling that there's a separation of church and state, which is nowhere in our Constitution. So it's not in our Constitution anywhere. So where did it come from? Well, in 1802, the Danbury Baptists in the state of Connecticut were a little concerned because a lot of them had understood what was going on in Europe. You see, when the people came here from Europe, a lot of them were fleeing a lot of religious unrest. There was major wars. There had been ever since the Reformation. Martin Luther, when he nailed his 95 theses to the wall in 1517, there was big wars between Protestants and Catholics. That had been going on for centuries. So almost 300 years after the Protestant Reformation, the Danbury Baptists are a little concerned that these religious wars would come to America. So they write a letter to Thomas Jefferson, who's the president of America at the time. And I'm going to read you that letter in full. And then we are going to read Thomas Jefferson's letter back to them. And both of them are relatively short. They're not long at all. But I would highly recommend you read that on your own. So anytime someone comes up to you and tells you about the separation of church and state, you're able to go to the source documents and let them know exactly why they are mistaken on we have freedom of religion, we do not have freedom from religion. So we'll cover that. And then after we're done with that, I wanted to go over a lot of the beliefs of the founders, some of the things that they said. Then I want to take what they said back then and relate that to us today. So showing how, you know, if we have laws, there's the letter of the law. It's what does it actually say? But there's also the spirit of the law. And that is what we're not really considering a lot today, because this is why there's this furious push to dismiss the founders as, oh, they owned a bunch of slaves and they stole the Indians' land, so nothing they have to say is important. When they, what they had to say is the foundation of all of our rights. So they're trying to use these wedge issues of slavery and the Indians lost their land to eradicate all of our rights. This is why we need to be very careful about this. So I wanted to go into the virtues of the founders, which is a very important aspect to look into, because we became very powerful because of virtue, and we are being destroyed because of a lack of virtue. That is a fact. There's absolutely no debating that. Anyone who's honest and looks at the statistics and understands what manner of life was being lived in 1776 and what kind of manner of life we are living today, you very shortly begin to understand there's something very wrong here. So then go ahead and consider virtue, what the founders had to say on that topic, what the definition of virtue is. And then I want to actually even use an antidote and show why a real world example today of how someone speaks at a city council meeting and does not understand virtue, does not practice it, and they get arrested. And how some of us, we go to city council meetings, we do understand virtue, and we say every bit as much as what they said, and we don't get arrested. So it's extremely important to know this stuff. This is the key that will allow you to unlock the doors to your liberty. Without this key, you're not going to get liberty. Without virtue, virtue is the key that, I never saw that before, but I think that's a good thing. Virtue is the key that unlocks the door of liberty. You do not unlock the door of liberty without the key of virtue. It will not happen. There's a lot of people who think that guns will do it. No, it won't. Doesn't matter how many guns and how many armies you have. If you don't have virtue, you will not be getting liberty. So here is that letter from the Danbury Baptist to Thomas Jefferson. Sir, among the many million in America and Europe who rejoice in your election to office, we embrace the first opportunity which we have enjoyed in our collective capacity since your inauguration to express our great satisfaction in your appointment to the chief magistracy in the United States. And though our mode of expression may be less courtly and pompous than what many others clothe their addresses with, we beg you, sir, to believe that none are more sincere. Let me interject here. Notice their writing. Notice how superior it is to our writing today. 99% of Americans cannot write like this today. And if you don't think that we are being deliberately dumbed down, I beg to differ. Charlotte Iserbeit wrote a great book, The Deliberate Dumbing Down of America, which I think everybody should read. A really good overview of what's been going on in our schools. Because just ask yourself, is it easy to control people who know a lot or people who know a little? Of course, it's easier to control people who know a little. So do you think the people who run America, these Talmudic Jewish bankers, do you think they want us knowing a lot or a little? They want us knowing a little, of course. That makes it easier to control us. So that's why it's important to be studying all this information out on our own. Okay, so our sentiments are uniformly on the side of religious liberty, that religion is at all times and places a matter between God and individuals, that no man ought to suffer in name, person, or effects on account of his religious opinions, that the legitimate power of civil government extends no further than to punish the man who works ill to his neighbors. And that is a very crucial point right there. Let's just go over that one more time. The legitimate power of civil government extends no further than to punish the man who works ill to his neighbors. Consider that sentence and then look where our government's at today. That sentence says, welfare's out. It's not the government's responsibility to do welfare. Our national standing army is out. We don't need a national standing army. We could handle that on our own. I would say a good 90% of our existing government is completely unnecessary. All you really need is your fire department, and even that probably could be privatized. Your police department probably could be privatized too. No, I suppose that is the government. Because if it's to punish the man who works ill to his neighbors, then it's that's the police department. But our police department doesn't even do their job today, because things that should be evil, like homosexuality, pornography, birth control, and abortion, the police are not doing anything about that. They're protecting those things. Meanwhile, those of us who tell the truth, the police are being used against us. So, okay, back to the letter. But sir, our constitution of government is not specific. Our ancient charter, together with the law made coincident therewith, were adopted as the basis of our government at the time of our revolution. And such had been our laws and usages, in which such still are, that religion is considered as the first object of legislation, and therefore what religious privileges we enjoy as a minor part of the state, we enjoy as favors granted and not as inalienable rights. And these favors we receive at the expense of such degrading acknowledgments as are inconsistent with the rights of freemen. It is not to be wondered at, therefore, if those who seek after power and gain under pretense of government and religion should reproach their fellow men, should reproach their order magistrate as an enemy of religion, law, and good order, because he will not, dare not, assume the prerogatives of Jehovah and make laws to govern the kingdom of Christ. Sir, we are sensible that the President of the United States is not the national legislature, and also sensible that the national government cannot destroy the laws of each state, but our hopes are strong that the sentiments of our beloved president, which have had such genial effect already, like the radiant beams of the sun, will shine and prevail through all these states and all the world till hierarchy and tyranny be destroyed from the earth. Sir, when we reflect on your past services and see a glow of philanthropy and goodwill shining forth in a course of more than 30 years, we have reason to believe that America's God has raised you up to fill the chair of state out of that goodwill which he bears to the millions which you preside over. May God strengthen you for your arduous task, which Providence and the voice of the people have called you to sustain and support you. Enjoy administration against all the predetermined opposition of those who wish to raise to wealth and importance on the poverty and subjection of the people. And may the Lord preserve you safe from every evil and bring you at last to his heavenly kingdom through Jesus Christ, our glorious mediator. That's paraphrasing a scripture in Timothy. And signed in behalf of the association, Nehemiah Dodge, Ephraim Robbins, Stephen Nelson. So they're basically, to paraphrase, saying they want to be sure that we are not going to have religious oppression here in America, that a man's relationship with God is between him and God alone. It's not for the government. Christianity was never designed as a religion to be forced on people at gunpoint or sword point. So Jefferson responds, says, gentlemen, the affectionate sentiments of esteem and approbation which you are so good as to express towards me on behalf of the Danbury Baptist Association give me the highest satisfaction. My duties dictate a faithful and zealous pursuit of the interests of my constituents, and in proportion as they are persuaded of my fidelity to those duties, the discharge of them becomes more and more pleasing. Believing with you that religion is a matter which lies solely between man and his God, that he owes account to none other for his faith or his worship, that the legitimate powers of government reach actions only and not opinions, I contemplate with sovereign reverence that act of the whole American people which declared that their legislature should, quote, make no law respecting an establishment of religion or prohibiting the free exercise thereof, thus building a wall of separation between church and state. Adhering to this expression of the supreme will of the nation in behalf of the rights of conscience, I shall see with sincere satisfaction the progress of those sentiments which tend to restore to man all his natural rights, convinced he has no natural right in opposition to his social duties. I reciprocate your kind prayers for the protection and blessing of the common Father and Creator of men, and tender you for yourselves and your religious association assurances of my high respect and esteem. Thomas Jefferson, January 1st, 1802. So they wrote on October 7th. Jefferson responded on January 1st. Almost took him 2 months to respond, which he's a busy man, no doubt. And that is the basis of it. But if you see what that means, it means we have freedom of religion, not freedom from religion. So this idea that Christians are not allowed to go with their moral viewpoints to public meetings and state them is a bunch of nonsense. And meanwhile, while Christians are not doing that, guess who is doing it? Atheists and some of the worst citizens in America are up there at city council meetings stating their corrupt opinions that are full of ignorance. And this is going unopposed by the Christians, because the Christians have been scared into cowering in their caves watching all this take place. That needs to change. And that's a huge, huge, huge issue that's going on in America. And it has been going on for the past 60, 70 years. So that is affects a lot of us. But, you know, this all goes back to the issue which we're going to move on to right now. And that is that our founders, who were all Christians, I don't know a single one who was not a Christian. They all had varying religions and beliefs. Some are said to be deists, like Jefferson and Washington and Franklin, but there's plenty of evidence that they weren't deists at all. And of course, these are the most notorious, but there was many devout followers of Christianity, such as Noah Webster, who wrote the Webster's Dictionary, Benjamin Rush, a very noted doctor of the time. Webster and Rush were in favor of teaching the Bible in the schools, and I believe Rush wrote a book actually on why alcohol should be banned. So you have no doubt can understand what where he would stand on drugs today. So virtue, wanted to focus on that word, and it is used, and the rest of this show, I think I'm going to go on virtue, what some of the founders said, examining their quotes on it, how that applies to today. But before I do, I want to go ahead and play a clip here. This is from Bakersfield, California City Council meeting. And it is a young woman. She looks to be, in her 20s. She can't be more than 25, unless I miss my guess. Soon we'll be going to video, so I could show you the video of it, but not tonight. Tonight, you're just going to have to settle for the audio. She's wearing a multicolored dress, and she gets up to speak at the city council, and she speaks to them on an issue that I agree with her on. She speaks on supporting Gaza. However, a lot of these people supporting Gaza are not your friend and my friend. They are simply radical activists who support a ton of other craziness. So it's crazy how we got strange bedfellows here, because a lot of these people, they support homosexuality. They support black and brown people, and white people are oppressors. They support drugs. They support abortion. They support pornography. I mean, they support all this wickedness, but then they pop up and say they support Gaza too. It's just mind-blowing how they poisoned every conversation. But here we go. This is, her name is pretty, Mr. Producer, can you find that? Oh, here it is. Her name is Riddhi Patel, Bakersfield, California. And here is her a two-minute speech. Let's go ahead and play that for you.
An United Liberation Front has drafted. I don't have faith that you'll do this. You guys are all horrible human beings, and Jesus probably would have killed you himself. And the thing is, though, it's very clear to me as someone who's been an organizer for the past couple of years that none of you care, because you guys don't care about anything happening.
All right, I'm going to have to stop at some of these parts. I love doing this. I've been wanting to do this for, the past 10 years at least. And now that I actually have a chance to do it, it's really good, because now I can actually criticize the people who need criticizing, who are almost never criticized by our regular media. So it's time for us to actually do this. So here she just said, Jesus would probably kill you if he was here. Now, first of all, Jesus didn't kill anyone. The people who actually deserved the death penalty, he whipped them out of the temple. So her saying that Jesus would probably kill you, that's wildly off base. And this woman uses the name of Jesus, and I strongly doubt she's probably has not studied the Bible for an hour of her life. But listen to how confidently she speaks, because this should be an example to all of us. We have millions of 20-year-olds who have this exact attitude, and they get up and they start speaking their opinions in public, and they don't know anything they're talking about. And if you try to tell them that they're dead wrong, they will get angry, and a lot of them will resort to violence now. This is how bad it is. So the way to counteract this is with knowledge, because when they understand that they are, because these people are wildly impressionable. So when a lot of people, like, it just takes about 10 of us, if we all get up united at a city council meeting, people like this get shut down and they get intimidated. Five of us went to a Sacramento city council meeting, and Lisa Kaplan, the Jewish council member up there, she was so terrified of us, even though she had 30 of her supporters up there and 50 police officers. So five of us, she shut down the city council meeting because she said she didn't feel safe. They had 80 and we had five. That gives you an idea. When the Bible says the righteous are as bold as a lion and the wicked flee when no man pursues, that's what we're dealing with. We're dealing with people who are desperately afraid of issues they don't even understand. Moving right along, let's continue with Ms. Patel.
In Palestine or any other country where oppression occurs,
Okay, so she said in Palestine. So yes, oppression is occurring in Palestine. Israel shouldn't exist. They did steal that land. She's right about that.
You don't care about the oppression occurring here. And I understand that you guys are all...
Here's where she starts to go off the rails. She says they don't care about the oppression here. So very likely she's talking about white people oppressing everyone who's black and brown. And she's off her rocker because America was 90% white in 1960. We are now 63% and falling fast. And that was because whites were very tolerant, welcoming to people who were not white. If it wasn't that way, we'd still be 90%. We actually should still be 90% white to be able to give an opportunity to a lot of other people, which was accomplished by Jewish stratagems, their 1965 Hart-Celler Act. New York Senator Emanuel Seller, a Jew, passed that Hart-Celler Act, which opened America to non-white immigration, which is why Ms. Patel is speaking at a city council meeting, why she's in America right now. And her thank you is to likely attack white people.
There's one simple sugar hack.
To speak in support of the city council introducing a ceasefire resolution, specifically the one that none of you care because you guys don't care about anything happening in Palestine or any other country where oppression occurs because you don't care about the oppression occurring here. And I understand that you guys are all horrible people, but the thing is, 2,300 people being evicted in the last year, those are votes. And you guys, those are votes to win here in Bakersfield. And while you guys parade Gandhi around.
All right, let's go in on that. So she's talking about you know, this is such an exciting thing. I might have to, I'm so excited about this. I might just change the course of this show. We might go from separation of church and state and virtue to critiquing some of these videos, which badly need critiquing. But she's talking about, people being evicted. So let's talk about that. So we're having all these housing issues and stuff because BlackRock and Vanguard are snapping up all the housing in America. They're trying to control all the housing. Once they control the housing, you and I won't be able to live anywhere unless we go along with their program. That's what they're doing. So when you see those signs on the side of the road that says, we'll buy your house for cash, don't, and it never tells you who it is that's buying the house. Why is that? Why don't they want you to know who's buying the house for cash? Because then you'll start to figure out what's going on. It's BlackRock and Vanguard behind all that. Because you know none of us Americans are just running around with $10 million in our bank accounts telling people, oh, I'll just buy your house for cash. That's not us Americans. No, no, no. It's the owners of the Federal Reserve who have all this unlimited money that they could throw around whenever they want. They can't make it too obvious, though. So if a house is worth like $300,000, they can't just jump in and say, hey, I'll buy that house for $700,000. They can't do that. They have to incrementally, and they've been doing this. So if your houses in all your neighborhoods are going for $250,000, they'll jump in and offer $300,000. And of course, is the homeowner going to say, no, I don't want $300,000. I want $250,000. No homeowner's going to do that. Everybody wants to sell their house for the most they can possibly get. So they work on our greed. And by doing that, they keep inflating the prices of the houses all across America until eventually people are just flat out priced out. This is where all this homelessness is coming from. So do landlords have the right to evict people? Yes, they do. They absolutely do. But it is a legitimate concern. We shouldn't have these issues with homelessness. If the Jews didn't have control of our money, we wouldn't have problems with homelessness. They've been playing around with our money for over 100 years. Every single financial problem in America goes back to the Jewish control of our Federal Reserve, and it's deliberate. We shouldn't be paying an income tax. We've kind of briefly talked about that in the past, but if landlord wants to evict a tenant, they can do it. That's their right to do it. It is not what this young woman does not understand, and over half of America does not understand. It is not the government's job to do welfare. It is the job of everyone and anyone to help the poor, the sick, the homeless, all these, the children, widows, all that, except the government. It's not the government's job to do that, because when the government gets involved, you get corrupt people who take control of the government and then try to use the suffering of these, of the homeless, the sick, you know, people who need healthcare. They use that suffering to do whatever they want to do with the government. That's what Obamacare was all about. How many stories did you hear? Oh, my mother had cancer and she was 67 years old and she couldn't get the treatment. So fast forward to, we need government healthcare. Not understanding that treatment under government healthcare is going to be far worse than what we ever had under private healthcare. See, these people don't understand the long game. Some do and are just pawns and puppets. So anyway, that's to her point. Now she's talking about Gandhi.
A Hindu holiday called Chaitra Navratri, it starts off this week. Mind you.
Now, this woman is going to cite Gandhi. And then what you want to do is listen to what she's going to say here shortly after she goes into Gandhi. She's obviously I know more about Gandhi than she does, and I'm not from India. I can tell you right now, Gandhi was nonviolent, and he would never endorse her methods and what she's doing right now.
That these holidays that we practice, that other people in the global south practice, believe in violent revolution against their...
Okay, does that sound ridiculous to you? Well, it should. She in one breath, she's using the word Gandhi. And in the next breath, she's talking about violent revolution, which is something that Gandhi did not believe in. These people, when you start to critically think about what they're saying, you realize we do not need to be listening to these people. Matter of fact, when these people get up to talk, we should have 10 people who get up there and who are ready to go up there right after them and correct the multiple errors they make in their statements. When I go to the Sacramento City Council, there's like routinely 15 to 30 of these speakers, and there's only about two or three of us. We don't have time to counteract all of their errors and all the lies that they believe.
Oppressors. And I hope one day somebody brings the guillotine and kills all of you motherfuckers.
Okay. So there you go. So bring the guillotine. And I guarantee you she doesn't understand the French Revolution, because that was a horrible thing. We do not want the guillotine ever again. I don't even care if it's for bad people. There's other ways of dealing with them. And I do believe in the death penalty, but not the guillotine. The French Revolution was instigated by Jews. They were allowed right back into France with a lot of privileges right after the French Revolution. So yeah, no, we don't want the guillotine. And then of course, as almost all these people do, what does she say? The MF-er word. So you're going to find that mostly these people are very ignorant, and they compensate for their ignorance by using profanity. So they use this very violent language. And if you're knowledgeable and you state the facts, they will use threats of violence and profanity against you. I've routinely encountered this. It's something that if you're going to go to city council meetings and you're a man, you should be prepared for.
Increased criminalization for no need other than you don't like when people come and hold you guys accountable for introducing ceasefire resolutions, because the only escalation in violence has been by you all. And so there's no need to continue. In the last 5 years I've attended city council meetings, there's...
So in city councils across America, you have these young activists who are members of these radical organizations, and they don't realize at the very top of these organizations, it's almost all Jews. They think, oh, you know, I'm against capitalism. I'm a hero. They virtue signal this stuff all day long. And 5 years, this young woman has been going to city council meetings. 5 years. She shouldn't have been going to five meetings without getting, you know, corrected.
Never been metal detectors. There's never been.
Oh, so she's talking about they've brought metal detectors to these meetings. Well, yeah, when these radicals come to meetings, I have to tell you, when I was going in Vallejo in 2012, there wasn't metal detectors. I was kind of surprised, but it didn't take long. It was after I was coming to the meetings, they started bringing the metal detectors. It was almost as if they were to say, Ryan, we have this crazy Nazi Ryan. This is what they like to say about me. So we need metal detectors. In reality, I didn't really mind. I knew we needed metal detectors because with these crazy deluded types coming up there, a lot of them are mentally ill. And you listen to them talk and you're like, this is crazy. Just last week in Sacramento, 2 weeks ago, they ended the meeting because I stated, matter of fact, I might play that. I think I will play that. Yeah, I'll pull that up. After we're done with this, I'll pull that up in Sacramento. That actually was never released online. So this is going to be a first time that you get to hear what just happened in Sacramento 2 weeks, because not one, two meetings were shut down. So I think that needs to be shown as well. But matter of fact, I won't even tell you about what the young man said. I'll let you listen to it with your own two ears. But let's continue on with Ms. Patel.
More cops. The only reason you're doing it.
Really quick. These people will always complain about more security and more cops when these violent, irrational people make more cops and metal detectors necessary. Let's continue.
Is because people actually don't care if you guys don't like them, and they're actually resisting, so you want to criminalize them. So regardless of whether you elect people in office, they'll backstab you, they'll let you die, and for that reason, you guys want to criminalize us with metal detectors, we'll see you at your house. We'll murder you.
Next speaker, please. Lance, followed by Kev, followed by Valeria. Ms. Patel, that was a threat, what you said at the end, and so the officers are going to escort you out and take care of that.
Well, there you heard it. This young woman, full of fire, and this is why, you know, this is another topic we need to discuss too. We need to repeal the 19th Amendment. God bless, there are millions of good and decent women in America, and God bless them. And the best women in this country, you don't know their names because they're not showing their bodies on the internet. They are not speaking out in public. They are not involved in politics. They are doing what God designed a woman to do. They are loving their husbands, obeying their husbands, having children, loving their children, caring for their homes. That is the woman's primary duty. Yes, we are all equal under the American law. Yes, we are all equal under the Constitution. Yes, we are all equal in Christianity. No, we do not have the same spheres. Women have a sphere they were designed for. Men have a sphere they were designed for. So this is what the Jews are doing. They're trying to confuse with transgenderism and all this, trying to confuse the roles. Feminism, women are trained to act like men. Men are trained to act like women. And it's absolute chaos. And it needs to be restored to the order that we had before. And we can't do that fast enough. So this young woman, she threatens to murder the city council. And of course, the mayor, who happens to be a woman too, sensed the threat. And Ms. Patel was arrested. And later on, I don't have the clip, but she's actually in court crying. Because she was arrested. And of course, all these radical groups are saying, oh, this is a good thing. No, it's not a good thing. We don't need to go to city council meetings and get threatened to murder people. That is not what you need to do. You need to go up there and tell the truth. And once that happens, the truth and the right will win pretty easily. But I want to pull up the meeting that happened in Sacramento just 2 weeks ago. Let's play that here. This will be very interesting here. I'll turn my sound all the way up, make sure everybody can hear it. All right. And I want to play this too for a number of reasons, but one of the main ones too is I want to show how we can go up there and tell the truth and we don't get arrested, although we do get harassed by Antifa thugs. People just like this young woman, and they go up there and they start uttering violent threats and they do get arrested. So yeah, this is very important stuff to pay attention to. So I believe it was the city council meeting back on, March 26th. It was. And that meeting came to a screeching halt. The Sacramento City Council, by the way, before we go on this, let's just talk about the tricks that they do to try to suppress and silence information they don't like. First of all, they make speakers speaking on matters not on the agenda speak at the end of the meeting, which a lot of times happens at 9, 10, 11, sometimes midnight. You have to wait to speak. That's first. It should be that we speak first. That's what should happen.
Good afternoon. I'm going to speak to order with the quick call the roll to establish a quorum.
Oh yeah, they're really good at hiding this stuff. We can't hear it. It's too there's no way you're going to be able to hear it. But I'll let you listen to here's another one. While I'm pulling that up, let's look at virtue, the original topic. And yeah, there should be no shortage of city council speeches on Gaza, because when people get up there to speak, few of them actually have any idea what they're saying or how to say it. Oh, here's another one. Okay, Jacob Frey. I think he's a Jew, and I think he was in Minneapolis at the time, a short while ago, during the George Floyd or Castile was killed. I think he was, but he gave a speech. Yeah, he is Jewish. I want to play that here. Just to give a sampling here of what some of these meetings involve, I'll go all over America. But once I'm done with these, we're going to go into virtue and how that applies to all of this. Okay, no sound on this one. Why am I not surprised? Anyways. This, because knowing what to say, how to say it at these council meetings, that's very few of us are taught public speaking. They used to have courses in that all the time. Not so much anymore. And that's public speaking. I mean, if we can't speak in public, that's a serious problem because how are we supposed to spread our message? We're not going to do it through the newspaper, the radio, not on social media. We're pretty much blacked out there. So it really limits us. Okay, here's one. Here's another one. This one's interesting. So this was May 30th of 2023. I wasn't even at the Sacramento City Council, and the whole place, they had people get up and yell and shout, and you're going to hear it. And you could try to listen to me speaking as they try to shout me down. It didn't work. Let me see, they had about 15 people up here at the front podium trying to block me from getting up, but I called in. This is before they shut down the Zoom comments. So here it is. See their tactics? This is why most people don't go to city council meetings, because of this right there. You see, they called my name, and what happens right after that? Boo from all over. So if you're a person watching this, you must think this Ryan Masano must be a terrible and a hateful person. And that is the communist agenda. This is Saul Alinsky's tactics that these young people, they don't know because they've never studied. His tactics were, you have to posterize and make the message in the messenger look ridiculous. And that's what's happening right here. You would think you're at a zoo. You listen to these people. These are young people. Almost, I'd say a good 80, 90% of them are under the age of 30. And listen to them. They sound like they're insane. Actually, some of them are insane.
Got a few remarks. First of all, start off with hurt people. So the behavior of a lot of people that are hearing right now, these people are hurt.
What you are listening to is one of the biggest problems in America. We have a mobocracy. We have groups of young people. And where are these young people's parents? They're nowhere on the scene. It's doubtful they were raised with stable parent families. That's the root of the problem. Because you get troubled people. They're the easiest to brainwash. Fatherless children, boys and girls, you give them an idea. You emotionally, propagandize them. And the Jews are masters at doing this. This is how their communist revolutions have gone down in Russia and in China. And it's right here in America right now. It's right around the corner. I cannot warn people strongly enough about this. But it's a mobocracy. It's ruled by the mob. If the mob, which is run by the Jews behind the shadows, if they don't like what you have to say, they are going to shut you down. And this is what you are listening to. And when I go on video, I'm going to show this to you too. So I'm trying to say that we were all given certain inalienable rights, and they are pretty clueless because they're shutting down my First Amendment speech right here in front of everybody. Okay, let me just interject again. So, by the way, all of the city council members, they are now... If one speaker is interrupted, it is the duty of that city council. It doesn't matter if the speaker agrees with them or not. It is the duty of the city council to give every citizen the right to speak. That is their job. The city council is allowing, there is about 10 to 15 activists up front. They're allowed to walk all over the room, get up, yell, scream, shout. The city council is allowing this. And they are all standing there holding signs saying, I think it's saying love, not hate. Now, when you're listening to these people, do they sound hateful? They sound pretty hateful to me. There's nothing loving at all about what they're saying. It's just like crazy land. People sitting here telling you it's gaslighting at its finest. They're telling you that we love you, and they're yelling and screaming and shouting F-bombs. I mean, no loving person in the history of humanity ever acted this way. And yet we're supposed to believe that they're loving and I'm hateful. Just crazy.
Supporters and had 50 police officers 5 minutes ago. None of us five who attended had anything dangerous. You knew that because there were metal detectors in front of the city council. Yet you ended the meeting. And committing the worst injustice of atrocities in world history. The best revolutionaries are a youth devoid of morals. Vladimir, thank you. Have a good day.
They allowed that. So that I, everyone should understand this is what we're dealing with. And this is not just Sacramento. This is not just me. Anyone who gets up and tells the truth in any city will be dealing with this kind of stuff. So, very important to understand. And once we do, we will be able to deal with a lot of this in a much better way. Okay, so we're about 8 minutes away from our station break at the 1 hour mark. And then for the second hour, if anyone wants to call in, be happy to do that. Otherwise, we got a ton to talk about on a lot of these topics. So anyways, we are... And I use that to illustrate the importance of virtue, because you see there's corrupt people and they, I don't know what it is, but the most ignorant and corrupt people just want to talk the most. It's just, it's a recurring, it's been happening for thousands of years and it will be happening for thousands of years more. And until righteous people actually get up and calmly but firmly assert themselves, which is what the godly need to do, we are not going to restore freedom and order. So a couple quotes, George Washington. And of course, if you say George Washington's name, they're going to say, oh, he had slaves. Yeah, well, he freed them too. And besides, America inherited slavery. And besides, every race has had slaves and every race has enslaved or been enslaved. That's every race. And I think less than 10% of the slaves involved in the transatlantic slave trade actually came here to America. So this idea that, oh, George Washington had slaves, that just discounts everything he had. No, America inherited slavery. We are the only nation that fought a war to get rid of slavery. So George Washington said, virtue or morality is a necessary spring of popular government. And it's true. If you don't have morality in the people, you either have foolish and ignorant people and a foolish and ignorant government, or you have wise and virtuous people and a wise and virtuous government. I'll ask you now, do we have a foolish and corrupt government? Yes, we do. Well, that points the finger at us, the people. The government is a reflection of us. If it is not what we want it to be, it needs to be replaced. And we are working on a new Declaration of Independence right now. But yeah, that definitely needs to come into place. Our government has long ago cease to operate for God and for us. They are operating merely for Talmudic Jewish interests all around the world. That's what the American government is being used for. The definition of liberty is freedom, power. Power is the ability to do. Choice, right, privilege, duty, standard. Virtue, morality, power, valor, merit, chastity, force, authority. So, if you don't have virtue, you don't have a popular government, and we don't have a popular government right now. Why do you think all these things are free? Why is television free? Why is it free to watch the NBA Finals, the World Series, the Super Bowl? Why is all that free? Why is pornography free? Why can you get drugs so cheaply? Because that attacks your virtue. If you're not virtuous, you are easy to enslave. That's why. George Washington, again, there is no truth more thoroughly established than that there exists an indissoluble union between virtue and happiness. And indeed, how true that is. You cannot be happy. It doesn't exist. I mean, when you turn your television on, you always see, it looks like those people on there, it looks like they're actually happy. We all know, I mean, those people are drugged up. It's all fake. I mean, you learn about it afterwards when these people, once you read their biography and you're like, this was like my favorite. Like, I loved Elvis's singing. I can't believe he was always miserable. You mean Marilyn Monroe was depressed? She didn't look depressed to me in the movies. Kurt Cobain wasn't happy all the time. I didn't know that when I was listening to his songs. The Beatles had depression in their lives. That wasn't really apparent to me. I mean, all these people, you know, and some of them you never find out about it because the media spins this stuff all day long. You're lucky to find out about the few that you do. Washington, again, of all the dispositions and habits which lead to political prosperity, religion and morality are indispensable supports. In vain would that man claim tribute to patriotism who should labor to subvert these great pillars of human happiness, these firmest props of the duties of men and citizens. Reason and experience both forbid us to expect that national morality can prevail in exclusion of religious principles. So you can't have national morality if you don't have the Christian principles that this nation was founded upon. Many people realize that these Ivy League schools, which are so badly corrupted, and that's because I think it's 7 of the 8 deans of these Ivy League schools are Jewish. There's the root of the problem. Also, I learned that when you take these tests, when you study for the SAT, there's a certain company, Kaplan. Kaplan is the name. Interesting, because city council member Kaplan on the Sacramento City Council is a Jew. Well, Kaplan, that study material, I think it was Eustace Mullins who said this, either him or David Duke. I'm not sure which one it was, but I looked it up. It looked pretty credible. So apparently the founder of Kaplan study materials, which is for basically everything, SAT, it's all over the place, 6 and 63 tests, so many tests. If you want to study for it, you go to Kaplan. And Kaplan, apparently, in the early days of the SATs, which the SAT used to be a way to show merit. Now it's under attack. I mean, reading and writing, those are white. And those are all about white privilege. We hear all this all the time. It's amazing how white people go to other countries and you don't get special privileges and you're not called a minority. But non-white people come to America and they get special privileges and they're called a minority. That's amazing. Kaplan, basically, after someone would take that test, the SAT, he would invite them to a party and you would get in for free if you could bring in one question on that SAT. So by doing this, Kaplan eventually got all the questions. And once he had all the questions, guess what the Jews did? They sat down, they had their kids study that, study. And I mean, if you got all the questions, how could you not get a good score on the SAT? And that's exactly what they did. And so that's how the Jews subverted our college system. That's why the school system today is completely controlled by Jews. The money's controlled by them. Not all Jews, Talmudic Jews. This is the ones I'm talking about. But you know, and people say, "Oh, Ryan, you hate all Jews." No, I don't hate all Jews. I just dislike people stealing my money, and I dislike people lying to me, subverting my political system, subverting the media. I just like that. And when I happen to go looking for the group responsible, and the group responsible are a group of Talmudic Jews, and I say the truth, the first thing I hear is that I want to do a Holocaust and I want to kill all Jews. This is ridiculous. Think about this. That is the equivalent of if somebody criticizes a Christian and the Christian turns around and said, "Oh, you must hate all Christians. Since you criticized me, that must mean you are behind communism in Russia. And you want to do another communist Bolshevik uprising over there and kill 40 million more Christians. Oh, you're a murderer." Well, Christians have never done that. I have never met any Christian who ever pulled a stunt like that. Even the Russians in Russia don't do that. But the Jews do it. They do it all the time. And I've got a quote from Shulamit Aloni, who is an Israeli politician who's actually on record saying, I might even be able to pull this up for you. She's on record saying that Jews use the Holocaust and anti-Semitism as a defense. It's a pretty widely show. Yeah, of course, it's not going to be on these videos. It's not easy to track that down at all. They do not want everybody knowing about that. That's an important part of their game plan. And if everybody found out about that, that would be a problem for the Jews. But yeah, Shulamit Aloni is on record saying that. I guess she just died 2014 at age 85. But yeah, oh, here it is. They do such a good job of hiding this stuff.
Yours is a voice of criticism we don't often hear in the United States. Often when there is dissent expressed in the United States against policies of the Israeli government, people here are called anti-Semitic. What is your response to that as an Israeli Jew?
Well, it's a trick. We always use it. When from Europe somebody is criticizing Israel, then we bring up the Holocaust. When in this country people are criticizing Israel, then they are anti-Semitic. And the organization is strong and has a lot of money. And the ties between Israel and the American Jewish establishment are very strong. And they are strong in this country. As you know, they have power, which... it's okay. They are talented people and they have power, money and media and other things. And their attitude is Israel, my country, right or wrong. They identify fiction. And they are not ready to hear criticism. And it's very easy to blame.
So there you are. You're hearing it right from her mouth that they use anti-Semitism and, oh, you know what? And I missed it. Let me just remind everybody, this is the Ryan Massano Show on Speak Free Radio. Thank you very much for listening. For those who do listen, please share this. For the listeners who are listening to the links, thank you very much for tuning in. We encourage, as much participation as possible. We are in a race right now with the truth to see if we get the truth out faster than these lies have time to unite in. If the lies gain traction here, which they are, we're in big trouble. So thank you very much for tuning in for those who do. Second hour, we're going to see if we have anyone calling in. And if that doesn't happen, we definitely will just simply proceed with our show. Let me just finish up with
certain acts of the Israeli government as anti-Semitic and to bring up the Holocaust and the suffering of the Jewish people. And that justifies everything we do to the Palestinians.
She actually founded the left-wing party Rats. And she was the leader of the socialist party Meretz. She's a member of the Socialist International, which is communist. So they just come out and tell you. They don't even try to hide it. They don't need to hide it. It works so well. What are you going to do about it? I could get up at the Sacramento City Council and show this, and the mayor will still say I'm an anti-Semite. It doesn't matter. That is that. And also, I want to play another clip too. This is another clip here. Let's see, when was this? This was 11 months ago. This was in Sacramento. I'm going to go ahead and play this. Got like 1,500 views. It's on YouTube. All told, it's been 2 million to 3 million views. So that's very encouraging that people are learning this stuff. So here it is.
Hey, getting this started. Again, good afternoon to everyone, to my colleagues, to the city staff, and always, most importantly, the members of the public who are in the audience and the international audience.
So for those who don't know, that is Sacramento Jewish Mayor Daryl Steinberg. And, you know, he's fair in a lot of what he does. But the problem is he does not have Sacramento's interests at heart. He does not have California's interests at heart. He does not have America's interests at heart. He has Jewish interests at heart. If you had a Christian mayor of Sacramento who you were not allowed to criticize Christianity at all, or he would stop you from speaking, that would be a problem for many people. But we do have a Jewish member of Sacramento who routinely shuts down speakers who criticize Judaism, which is a very faulty religion. You start looking into that Talmud and we have some serious problems. So I try to be understanding. Steinberg likely was raised Jewish. He was raised in a synagogue. He's been raised in this. As much as the heat is that I get, if he turned on Judaism, he might not even survive. I'm not sure how much dirt they have on him, but I'm sure it's a lot. The next thing you would know, the Sacramento Bee would have headlines about everything bad they know about Steinberg, which I'm sure is a lot. The Jews know their own. They know it very well. So for him or Kaplan, who's a Jew, for them to step out of line, oh man, they might end up dead. So, you know, even if he wanted to change and leave this corrupt system that he's a part of, he would have a hard time doing that. And obviously he lacks the courage to do it. Now, if he were to turn around and start saying, yeah, and besides, who would he go to? Would he go to the FBI, which is controlled by Jews? Would he go to the CIA? Would he go to the local police? Who would he go to with evidence of the corruption? They're all controlled by Jews. Would he go to the Sacramento Bee? Would he go to the television? Would he go to the radio? Where would he go? They're all controlled by Jews too, and he knows it. So, yeah, it's not easy to do. For one man to stand up and state the truth, very difficult. So let's continue.
Audience watching from cable television.
Oh, you know, and this is him at the beginning of the meeting. Oh, this is April 18th of 2023. And I counted. We're actually in the middle of filing a lawsuit against Sacramento. And I'm showing this because I'm trying to show how one way, perhaps other people do this too, to go to these city council meetings and get that truth out. Because without this truth and without virtue, we are never getting our liberty back. So, but if you look at him at the beginning of the meet, he looks so happy. He sounds so like a very polished speaker. He's got a suit on, appears dignified and respectable. But when the truth is stated, that's when you expose his true colors. Now, humans, they are like tea bags. When you put them in hot water, that's when you start finding out what they're made of.
Every single time.
Oh, and let me also add, I want to give a very special thank you to the account on Gabs. It's called Sons of God. He's out of Germany. He has done a fantastic job of spotlighting what has been going on in Sacramento. And I would like to say pretty much single-handedly, he has spread these videos across America, across the world. So thank you very much to him. If anyone goes to his account, basically he had a business and the Jews came after that and crashed it. So if you're able to contribute, help him out any, that would be very welcome. But yeah, he has done a phenomenal job. He does the editing. I basically just give him the video. He takes the editing, adds his own slant into it. And is a very principled person too. One of the very few people on social media that I have a lot of respect for. He does a really good job of spreading the truth. And he's a very insightful person. He's got insightful videos and posts nearly every single day. There's a couple accounts like that. Asha Logos is another one. Revive Truth on Gab is another one. And I follow about 100 people, and every one of them I would highly recommend following too, because I had to weed out people who to follow and who not to follow. I had to block 700 plus people, all these people using racial slurs. But anyways, let's continue.
Every single time. Ryan Masano on items 10 and 11.
Thank you. Yeah, so I'm here to talk about a number of things. But before I begin, because I'm going to be back up here, I want to note that it's better to be slapped with the truth than kissed with a lie. So I'm not here to appeal to people's feelings. I'm here to tell the naked, unvarnished truth. Now, all of us have been brainwashed since birth. So what I am about to say is going to sound extremely offensive to a lot of people. But truth sounds like hate to those who hate truth.
So what I want to address is the COVID response, because it was ridiculous. And everyone responsible, beginning with you, ought to be very ashamed of themselves. Because if you can't figure out basic math that 99.9% of people are recovering, and you just crashed the economy and took money out of the pockets of landlords and crashed small businesses, which this is why your people got kicked out of 109 countries, we have a problem. We have a big problem. And this is going to continue ongoing. This is an outrage to America. You talked about law. This is a travesty to law. There is no law, because the information and money are completely controlled by a small group of people. And if you say their name, you're called an anti-Semite, which you're just itching to say right now. But I know you're against.
I've heard enough of you.
You know you're not. I have free speech. I have free speech. You Jews, this is your game. This is what you play. This is what you play. This is what you play. So anyways,
All right. So now you hear that interruption from the back. There was three women. They never identify their names. They're known as SVO and Samuel. Samuel appears to be a transgender. I'm not exactly sure about that, but I think it was White Lives California, who's also been very helpful. Thank you very much for the work that they have done. They actually did, I think they doxed her. And if what they did was accurate, I'm not sure, because I can't verify it, but it looked like the picture they posted was of like a young, attractive 20-year-old woman or something. And all of a sudden, there's been surgeries, and Jill is now Jack. It's just crazy. It's so sad. These kids that are being brainwashed into changing their gender, it is horrific. And, you know, you almost hesitate to say this stuff, because you know anyone who does this stuff, they are very disturbed. And of course, they will always talk about the rates of suicide, which is very sad. I mean, among homosexuals and transgenders, there's enormous rates of suicide. And you know, I'm very compassionate and sensitive to the young people who are dealing with this. I understand it should never have been an issue that they had to deal with. We should have never legalized as a society homosexuality, pornography, birth control, and abortion. None of that should be legal. It should all still be illegal, as it was in 1960, before our rogue Jew-controlled Supreme Court legalized it all. So my heart goes out to these people. You know, really briefly, let me, you know, it's funny too, because this transgender who has been up, matter of fact, they were just at the last meeting too. They actually didn't speak, but they made sure to talk to me on their way out. They never want to actually have a discussion. I've invited them to talk. They don't want to talk. They want, all they do is sit there and when my back is to them and I'm speaking, they'll backstab me. Which, you know, I just say like what Jesus says, God, forgive them. They know not what they do. But I think we do need to understand these things. You know, homosexuality is a crime against nature. And I want to go over a story. This happened in Vallejo. For those who are from Vallejo, it was over there in the Admiral Callahan shopping center. There was used to be an Allstate there by the Safeway. Used to love working. I worked for Jim Spencer. He was a very amazing black man who owned the Allstate, did a fantastic job. I worked for him for about 4 years before he sold the agency. Had a great time. A wonderful man from North Carolina, a very likable personality, very good businessman. So I worked for him, and when I was working for him, I was in the office one day. It had to be 2005, 2006. And a young boy, he had to be, oh, I don't know, 8, 9 years old, came walking into the office, and he was selling candy. So in my mind, in that kind of neighborhood, which is rather dangerous, I don't think I would be letting a child walk the streets selling candy, but it, that's, well, I started talking with him, and, you know, for a 9-year-old, he could carry on a 30-minute conversation pretty effortlessly, which is pretty impressive. Young black boy, very good speaker. Down the road, turns out there was definitely trauma in his home, which, you know, has been deliberately foisted on the black community by Jewish bankers. But got to know him fairly well. He'd always come in. His brother would come in occasionally. I'd buy candy, talk to him. Really bright, intelligent young man. Had very high hopes for his future. Still do. You know, if he changes, makes a few different choices, he's a very talented young man. Well, that went on for about 2-3 years, 2008, 2009. Then I worked for another agent from 2009 till about 2012. A young black couple bought it, Kevin McMiller and Veronica. Had an overall good experience, kind of had a differing of opinions at the end. So I went and worked with David Sykes, an Allstate agency in Vallejo as well. Had a good experience there as well. And then eventually another Allstate agent, a black man who was a friend of Jim Spencer, sold me his agency. And this was in 2012. So in 2012, when I had got my new agency, I was standing in front of it and I noticed a young man with tattoos. His hair was dyed black and he was looking at my agency. At that time, I was kind of actually just beginning to learn about crime statistics and all this, because up until my mid-30s, I had no idea about what was really going on. The media had me completely snowed. Yours truly was an Obama voter in 2008. I knew he was bad in 2012, but there I was supporting Trump in 2016 and 20, because I didn't realize the Jews controlled both sides. But anyways, this young man, he says, are you Ryan? And I said, yeah. It's kind of suspicious, like, why is he looking at my agency? Some people will say that's profiling, but why is a man with multicolored hair and tattoos? What? So he says, oh, do you remember me? He said his name. And I said, oh, wow. Like you've changed so much. Like I just was shocked. So I got to talking with him. Apparently there had been abuse at his house. And not just this, you know, kids and women, they say there's abuse and there's no abuse at all. But I'm talking about this really was abuse. There was definitely molestation from, I believe it was his mother and father. I could be mistaken. It might've been only one, but it was definitely there. So he got kicked out. I think his older brother was like a pimp. So it was a pretty rough life. I think he was like 16 at the time. And I talked with them. Kept on and on contact with them for a number of years. But eventually, I think it was about 2015, I was staying in an office and he was homeless, had nowhere to stay. And he was telling me some pretty horrific stories about what he was having to do to like get food and clothing and or housing. So I was like, you know what, why don't you just stay at this office until you find something, until you get emancipated or find some stable work. And I tried to recommend books for him to read and all this. He was a very friendly guy. He had a lot of friends, had no difficulty in making friends. Well, sure enough, you know, as many of us know, when kids are molested, they often develop a tendency to get into homosexuality. I'd say a good 90% of your homosexuals, either they were molested as kids, they were not raised with a stable father figure, or they were into porn use that escalated into homosexuality. So that's what happened with him. Eventually he began telling me, oh, this is my boyfriend. And, so he would, I think, you know, this other guy, this young man I was talking to was black and this other guy was white. So he'd be like, oh, this is my boyfriend. So these kids are like 15, 16. And I know the sexual revolution has just been foisted on America. So I'm kind of like, ordinarily, this is like just flat out wicked, but I'm kind of like, you know, you got to be patient with these people. They have nowhere to turn. So, you know, I would try to help him out. I would try to talk to him. You know, I would tell him, look, that, you know, this whole boyfriend thing, that's not who you are. You know, that's not natural. That's not normal. I know the media is lying to you. You need to get up off that media. You need to start reading books, try to refer him to books. But that social media was such a draw for him. And there was no one there when he was between like 12 to 18 to like regulate what he was looking at on social media, which is like a recipe for a perfect disaster. So sure enough, it came to a head one day. It was interesting too, because I actually had a man who was a member of the Israeli Defense Force, believe it or not, who rented a room in my office. This was before I knew anything about the Jews. And to this day, I kind of consider him a friend, even though I know if I say anything negative about Israel, there's going to be severe flack because he's a staunch supporter of it. He actually came here from Russia. So I wonder now that I know that Jews were behind communism, they actually had Jewish wars among themselves too in Russia, but not sure about that. But anyways, the Jewish man that lived in my office or rented a room for his business, he said he had a hat that was missing. And of course I didn't take it. So he said, well, it must be this young man that I had staying in my office. And the young man, it was interesting. This was the first time in my life that I saw a clash between two top victim groups, which was a black man yelling racism and a Jew who didn't say anything about anti-Semitism. He's just was like, you need to move out. And so I didn't want to disappoint my Jewish friend. He owned his own business and stuff. So I was like, well, you know, and then as soon as the young black man started hollering about racism, well, I just was not going to tolerate that. So I didn't realize if I had to go back and do it again, I probably would have told the Jewish man to leave because he was probably the one not telling the truth. But I don't know. I'll give him the benefit of the doubt. But anyways, if he's listening to this, and he might be, I still consider you a friend. I know it's impossible to have a logical conversation on these. You get far too emotional on it. But for what it's worth, I wish you the best. I just don't support Israel at all, and I never will. And then, so anyways, it came to a head a little while later because this young gentleman came to me after he got kicked out and told me, well, I'm a homosexual. You need to accept that. So I told him, well, you know, I'll do what I can to help you. And I had done a lot. I mean, I think I bought $150 worth of books one time for him. I think I spent like $300 on clothes one time for him. I spent, bought him food plenty of times, gave him free housing. I had gone above and beyond, but I just simply was not going to support a youngster who was trying to flaunt his homosexuality. That would not be happening. So I let him know, you know, if you're going to continue on in that course, well, then you're going to have to leave. So that was the last time I saw of him. But that's why I say that, because this young transgender that shows up at these city council meetings actually has a facial resemblance to this young man. Same. I often question myself, I'm like, is this the same person? That would be crazy if I kicked him out of my office probably back in 2018, around that time. And now they're coming to Sacramento City Council meetings. This was the one in Sacramento is a girl turned into a boy. The one in Vallejo was a boy. They weren't into transgenderism, just homosexuality. So, but it's just interesting. Not sure what to think about that, but there's three of these radical communists that come up. They don't know they're communists. They always come up and holler about black and brown people are being oppressed. They don't know any of the crime statistics. They don't understand who's pushing this narrative. They're on social media nonstop. So, but let's continue.
Believe me, we agree on this, but let the speaker speak because you're right. That's it.
Now, listen to this. So the mayor is trying to silence these women in the audience. Look at this game. So I have free speech, and the mayor's sitting here trying to pretend like he cares about my free speech while they're interrupting me. Now, he should have been kicking them out is what he should have been doing. But he has never kicked these people out. The people who sit there and interrupt me, he allows them to sit in these meetings, and this is what they do.
He has the right to speak his evil.
So the mayor says, I have the right to speak my evil. he did very good. He avoided racist, anti-Semite, bigot, Nazi. He never said any of that. He did a very good job.
Can you put 30 seconds back on? 15 seconds, please.
Yeah, 15 seconds, please,
okay.
Proceed.
So as I was saying before I was rudely interrupted, I do not hate.
So you listen to that incessant interrupting from the back. Listen to it. And, you know, I would happily sit down with these young women and have a conversation. And if they actually sat and listened, which is hard for their type to do, they would, within an hour, learn more than they've learned in their entire lives. But they are in no hurry to sit down and talk. They come up there. They're radical activists, and they're not there to talk because their friends will give them heat if they sat and talked to a quote-unquote Nazi.
If I interrupted it, you would kick me out with the police. Why are they being allowed to interrupt me?
You just said something super anti-Semitic.
So we can have a private discussion.
Thank you for your comments.
Okay, so you have people from the audience that are interrupting me. I would like my time to be
full.
And fuck you, Daryl Stafford.
And that right there, I don't like profanity on my show, but that right there was one of those activists. So she gets up to speak after they're done interrupting me. She throws an F-bomb at the mayor. So it's a circus. They want you to think that these people are up there to criticize the mayor. They're not up there to criticize the mayor. They're there to shut and us down and interrupt us while pretending that they're opposing the mayor. So it's a big circus. Whether they're doing it unwittingly or wittingly, I am really not interested. None of them really has anything valid to say up there. They're not there to learn. They have nothing to teach. It's a waste of our time.
So I'm up here to talk about the main problem, which is money, because that's what all these problems come down to. And there's a small group that controls all the money. And maybe not all of them are to blame for this, but this is about money. It's about the banks. It's about them raising the housing prices so that nobody could afford housing. Every single evil agenda in America right now is due to one problem. And that problem, and communism and capitalism are backed by the same people. And as a matter of fact, if we're going to talk about death, let's talk about the 100 million Chinese and Russians murdered by communists. And who was Leon Trotsky? What was Leon Trotsky's real name?
Okay. So see how this works? When you begin to state facts, they're allowed to shout you down. So your facts don't matter. And what's very shocking and sad about this is this is the exact scene that was taking place in Russia and China when 100 million got killed. And it's repeating itself right now in America.
The First Amendment is so that I listen to you and I agree with a lot of you. It is not that I should have the right to speak.
Speak to the council. Speak to the council. Let the vile man speak.
The mayor is hyperventilating. Did you just hear him? Let the vile man speak. It's sad, but it's funny.
Please, let him speak. So, actually, the issue that needs to be addressed is the control of money. And this is why in every single city in America, the nicest buildings are banks. You know who's not affected by unemployment and all this economy? The banks. In every single city in America. And why is that? They control everything. The homelessness and all that is because of the bankers and the people who are behind that. And I get it. 5 years ago, if I'd have been saying this stuff, I'd have been reacting the same way as the audience did. I understand that. But at the end of the day, we're going to have to get past the media and unite, or this problem is going to continue. Thank you.
So there you go. That is what you can expect. This is why a lot of Americans do not go to their city council meetings, because they don't want to confront this stuff. But these people are the actual minority. And it's very troubling that these young people are allowed to come and just spew their nonsense unchallenged. You know, there's a lot of people that think, oh, you know, I have guns, I own property, I'll be set. You know, if the mobs start going wild, I'll just take my guns out. That's not how it's going to work. The Jews control China. That's the weapons manufacturing. If you don't think they could have submachine guns, at least 200 of them in Sacramento and every major city within, I don't know, months, you're crazy. These people can have as much ammunition, as much weaponry, advanced weaponry we've never really dealt with. They can do that. So it's about time a lot of people start speaking out, because the window for when is a good time to speak out is rapidly closing. So anyways, let's, now we've kind of looked at this virtue. We got about a half hour left. Let's see if we got anybody. Okay. So let's continue on. For the last half hour, we'll just continue on with the virtue aspect of, of this. Also, oh, you know what? There's actually, I'll do one more quote on virtue. And then there was an article that I wanted to go over. It was on UN's review, and I wanted to review that. So yeah, one more quote on virtue. Here it is. Patrick Henry. bad men, and we just went over his speech yesterday on Give Me Liberty or Give Me Death. There's two quotes by Patrick Henry. Virtue, morality, and religion. This is the armor, my friend, and this alone that renders us invincible. These are the tactics we should study. If we lose these, we are conquered, fallen indeed. So long as our manners and principles remain sound, there is no danger. And Patrick Henry also said, bad men cannot make good citizens. It is when a people forget God that tyrants forge their chains. A vitiated state of morals, a corrupted public conscience is incompatible with freedom. No free government or the blessings of liberty can be preserved to any people but by a firm adherence to justice, moderation, temperance means self-control, frugality, and virtue, and by a frequent recurrence to fundamental principles. So that is that. That's tough. There's two articles, actually. I think I'm going to go this last article. We might be able to get through it in a half hour. Yeah, let's do this. Virtue doesn't really work when there's no objective truth. Because if you don't have objective truth and objective morality, if everything's relative and everything's subjective, you have a problem. Now let's go over that difference, because we aren't taught this stuff in school. I did not learn this in school. I had to go pick up a dictionary and look these words up for myself. So objective truth is something that is true in every circumstance, for every human, for all time. And you know what? I would say this too, because I'll tell you, when I would study, or when I sat in Bible classes, and I've sat in hundreds, if not thousands, I took notes. Now, why did I take notes? You know why I took notes? Because the shortest pencil is better than the longest memory. It doesn't matter how great your memory is. The best listeners will retain maybe 10% of what they hear. So if that's the case, when you write things down, your attention goes up a ton, because now you're hearing it, you're seeing it, your body's actually writing it. So because you're using more of your senses, you're more likely to retain and remember this. So whenever, you know, if you're driving, don't do this, but if you're listening to a radio show or if you're in a class, take notes. I can't stress that enough. And then I actually just got a book today on, I do need to learn cursive. All this time I've been taking notes and I don't know cursive, or I know it, I just haven't really used it, but I need to get, have a much better cursive. So I actually just started on a course and a book, which if you go to my website, masanonews.com, it'll have that article on reading and writing cursive, and how to, a book on it too. A really good one from the 1800s. but anyways, the article I want to go over, it's called Sophism, the ideology that destroys societies and nations. So subjective truth is true for just you. Like, it may be true. So what's an example of a subjective truth? An example of a subjective truth is your boss was very difficult to work with, and you got fired and it wasn't really your fault. Does that happen? Yeah, it does happen. So a subjective truth was, yes, you had a boss and you were unfairly fired by your boss. Now, that's your subjective truth. Now, a lot of people will take their experience and try to turn that into an objective truth. And so they'll say, okay, so since my boss fired me unfairly, therefore all bosses, this is the lazy thinking that a lot of people use, all bosses are unfair and will fire you. And you know who's especially vulnerable to this kind of thinking? Women. Women are very susceptible to this emotional kind of thinking. So to a woman, it is very hard to persuade her that her experience is not really objective truth. So case in point, anytime this happens so frequently, it's very rare when a woman is mistreated by her father or mistreated by her husband, very rare that that woman can avoid venting her anger at that mistreatment at other men. That happens very frequently. Women will say, oh, all men are bad. Well, you had a bad husband. That doesn't make all men bad. Or let's say if a child is molested, they become, you know, this is why children being molested, which is done far more commonly by homosexuals, this is why it's such a horrific thing, because it clouds that child's view of the entire world. When a child is molested, which is unnatural, they grow to hate themselves. And when you hate yourself, can you love someone else if you hate yourself? No, you cannot. So that self-hatred, because yeah, sex as a child is wrong. Now, it's not the child's fault. It's not their fault that that happened to them. But it's very hard for them to deal with that guilt and that sense of shame that comes. And so what happens is they take that self-loathing, which is the result of all sin, even when sin is done to us. Nobody can really hurt any of us except ourselves, but that's a hard thing for a child to learn. They don't really, even women, when they're raped, they don't, a few women understand that's not, a lot of them will try to say, oh, it was my fault for this. No, it's not your fault. It was somebody else's fault. Though women shouldn't be putting themselves in compromising situations either. that's not an excuse for rape. But anyways, on a lot of these topics, it's so hard. You state one thing and there's so many other considerations that you have to say, or the left will try to take your one little clause and transform it. But anyways, yeah, it's hard when a child is molested for them to, they often hate everyone, because a child, how they are, if they're given a lot of love at home, they will reflect that love to the world. When you see these young people that are very angry and hateful, which you're seeing it across America, you see it in schools, you see it at city councils, you are dealing most of the time, not always, but most of the time, you're dealing with a child who experienced trauma and hatred in their home. And so they're coming to these meetings and they are lashing out with this hatred that, sadly, this is why I try not to get angry at these young people that interrupt and stuff at the city councils. Cause I think to myself, I'm just like, you know, I had a beautiful childhood. I am so grateful to my parents and my church for the wonderful childhood that they gave me. And they gave to all my siblings, and the kids in the church were given that as well. So when these angry and frustrated and often violent young people come to these city councils, I try to be patient with them, because I realize there are limits. Don't get me wrong. These people, it does need to be addressed. But a lot of them had miserable childhoods. And when they're coming out, it's their cry for help. You know, when a child is mistreated, they often will go around and mistreat others. It's their cry for help. So anyways, try and make my way through this. It's called Sophism. This is on LaRouche. I don't agree with LaRouche 100%, but I thought this was a pretty interesting article. What I'm about to say here, you should salute in terms of Lyndon LaRouche's Visualizing the Complex Domain essay, as well as his recent Truman paper. What I'm about to say is situated within a more than 30-year continuity of historical work in the LaRouche organization. This is written by Michael Liebig. I don't know about that last name. It sounds fishy, but the article seemed pretty spot on. The ongoing history project is based on the rather fundamental concept. Isochronicity is a central feature of creative mentation. Without breaking apart the Cartesian mental corset with its rigid categorization of the past, the present, and the future, creative hypothesizing is impossible. The isochronic understanding of history in view of the current world situation and future generations is a fundamental point for any political action that is committed to truth. And this is a fundamental point for us. Let me just break in here. A commitment to truth. If your life is not based on that, you have a problem. And a point to be emphasized, the isochronic understanding of history has nothing to do with the widespread obsessive fixation of drawing artificial mechanical parallels between the past and the present. Another fundamental point in terms of the LaRouche organization's permanent history project has been that it never accepted the separation of the history of ideas and so-called general history. The two are inseparable. They are one. And my remarks today will focus on precisely this, the power of truthful ideas and the negative destructive power of ideologies in history. It is ideas that make nations and states, and it is ideologies that break nations and states. Ideologies typified by sophism. So all of these agendas, this climate change, this racism, whites are racist, white supremacy, all of the agendas of the left are destructive ideologies which are going to destroy America. And the Republicans go along with a lot of these ideologies too. Let's not deceive ourselves. Allowing themselves to... the process of self-destruction of nations, allowing themselves to slide along the track of an ideology which repudiates the crucial ideas of truth-seeking and the progress of culture, has been addressed many times by LaRouche in respect to Rome, the Roman Republic, destroying itself and turning into an empire, which then, over time, decomposed. We owe it to a man of crucial importance for Europe's reconstruction after World War II, and a passionate admirer of Franklin Delano Roosevelt. Okay, Roosevelt was way off, so to have given us crucial advice on this. It's 90-year-old Max Konstam, who in spring 2002 told Mark Birdman and myself, LaRouche is right on Rome, but also look at Athens. Look up Thucydides again. Go through, again, the Athens-Milos encounter during the Peloponnesian War. And indeed, the more one looks into the history of Greece and the history of Athens in particular, you recognize how ideas were generating fabulous progress in terms of culture, statecraft, and the economy. And you see as well how fast Athens went down once it got endemically infected with the ideology of sophism. Both the rise and the fall of Athens are unique, spectacular achievements and failures occurring in an astonishing density. With all due respect for India, its culture and history, which I admire so much, mankind owes so much to what India generated culturally long before there was a Greek culture. But having said this, there is, to my knowledge, nothing in world history so far that compares with the cultural achievement in Greece during the roughly 200 years between Solon and Plato. And for Greek history and culture, Athens was the center. So the history of Athens, in a positive but also, as we will see, in a negative respect, is a unique experiment, so to speak, in terms of world history. Now let's look at the timetable for the period between Solon and Plato. 624 to 560 BC, Solon of Athens. 624 to 546, Thales. 611 to 546, Anaximander. 535 to 470, Heraclitus of Ephesus. 580 to 500, Pythagoras of Samos. 490, one of the first battles for liberty ever in world history, Battle of Marathon. 480 was the Battle of Marathon, was the land-based battle. 10 years later was the sea-based battle under Themistocles, the Battle of Salamis. 479 was the Battle of Plataea. 477, the Attic Naval League. 461, the Sparta-Athens rupture. 500 to 429, Pericles of Athens. 450, the beginning of democratic rule of Pericles. 431, beginning of the Peloponnesian War. 415, the Sicilian expedition, which was a disaster. 404, downfall of Athens and the Peloponnesian War. 399, judicial murder of Socrates. 480 to 410, Protagoras. 490 through 416, Gorgias, chief representative of sophism, teacher of Callicles and Thrasymachos. 469 to 399, Socrates. 427 to 347, Plato. 387, the founding of the Platonic Academy. Now, and let's look at these maps of ancient Greece and Athens. This reminds me of a truly outstanding man and friend of ours who was murdered last week in his Moscow apartment, Professor Grigory Bondarevsky. He would tell us many, many times, without a good map, you won't understand almost anything. So keep that in mind. Maps are very relevant for understanding history. Now, when it comes to the history of Greece and Athens, we have, luckily, general access to a crucial primary source, Plato's Dialogues. They do contain excellent historical material and insights, especially if you add the works of Xenophon. But we are also lucky that there exists a truly outstanding work on Greek history by a towering personality of ancient historiography, Ernst Curtius. Between 1857 and 1868, Curtius published his three-volume Greek history. And I think this work is a rare example of what one may call classical historiography, with a depth of insight and a breadth of knowledge of ancient Greece that later generations of historians have been unable to match. If you are interested in the history of Rome, there's Theodore Mommsen's six-volume History of Rome, written in the late 19th century, which I believe is translated into both French and English. And there's Edward Myers, The Consulship of Pompey and the Reign of Caesar on the Final Phase of the Roman Republic, published in 1919. Also to be recommended is Meyer's 7-volume History of Ancient Times. Last not least, as a crucially important source on Roman history, there are Shakespeare's Roman plays, which, as Muriel Mirak Weisbach has shown, provide a much better historical insight than most of academic works of 20th century historians. Why did Athens go down? Now, on the question of the fantastic rise of Athens and its subsequent rapid downfall, Ernst Curtius has made a crucial point. Most people would say, and not really wrongly so, that Athens fell because its productive middle class of farmers and artisans became, like in the case of the Roman Republic, marginalized by oligarchical families engaged in maritime trade, banking operations, and the large slave-running manufacturers and latifundia. The transformation of the Attic League, in which Athens was the primus inter pares of Greek city-states into a quasi-empire of Athens, led to the latter's dependency on forced subsidies from its vassals, one may call, more simply, looting. This looting, in turn, was used to subsidize Athens' once productive middle-class citizenry, and in that process, Athens' citizen soldiers and citizen sailors became increasingly substituted by mercenaries, which was an important aspect of Athens' imperial overstretch, and ultimately of Athens' defeat in the Peloponnesian War. All these observations are true, and one could elaborate on them a lot more, but they miss a crucial point. I won't read many quotes here today, but this quote from Volume 2 of Ernst Curtius's Greek History is crucial. Athens did not fall because of its external enemies. Athens fell through itself. Key point there. Athens did not fall because of its external enemies. Athens fell through itself. And that's exactly what America is facing today. Stains of a treasonous spirit were recognizable in Athens already during the times of the Persian Wars. But these tendencies became a genuine threat to the state when the teachings of Sophism penetrated Athens. It was Sophism which, above all, stimulated the force of destruction. Sophism dissolved the bonds that brought together the hearts of the citizens into common aims. A wealth of the finest talents was there, but they were turned into their opposite. The best minds became the worst enemies of the state. Sophist education became a poison that destroyed the marrow of the Athenian state. Now, we have sophism today. It's called cultural Marxism. All these lies, these constant lies that are being told, lies of omission, crime statistics by race are not being shown, lies of commission, we're told that all races, this equality that, well, that could be true. But what I do know is this whole Hart-Celler Act was illicitly passed. And so America should still be 90% white to this day. This whole attempted extermination of the white race, which is the Kalergi plan, which is actively proceeding as I'm reading this, is something that everyone should be aware of. And if they were, it would be stopped in its tracks. Okay, many of you here in this room have studied Plato. You know that the majority of Plato's Socrates dialogues either explicitly or implicitly deal with sophism. The attack on sophism is a thoroughgoing leitmotif of Plato's Socrates dialogues. Take the sophist, take Protagoras or Gorgias. The latter dialogue, I would want to address a bit more thoroughly because Gorgias deals with sophism and Athenian politics most directly and most ruthlessly. Even if you know little about Greek history, you will know the term sophistry and what you, here and today, spontaneously associate with that term sophistry. A sly, mean, dishonest attitude is quite on the mark. During the 5th century BC, sophism emerged as a fashionable ideology which increasingly became the hegemonic counterculture in Greece. Almost no original sophist texts have survived, and that's no great loss. Most of what we know about sophism we know from Plato, and a bit also from Aristotle, who later repackaged sophism into a new ideological product so it could be brought back on the culture market after Socrates and Plato had completely discredited it in its original form. If you want to define the core features of Greek sophism, you might say, these are very crucial because this is exactly what's going on in America right now. It's funny how Solomon said there's nothing new under the sun. Stuff just keeps recycling itself. There is no knowable truth, period. There is only sense perception. So leave it there and try to have a good time. Now, how many Tens of millions of people in America believe that. These are your materialistic people who are chasing money, chasing pleasure. I mean, I'm not going to diverge. I could give hundreds of examples right now, but I'm not going to get interrupted. I'm going to stay on topic. But how many people do we know? And how many of us have those? I've had that. Pursuing pleasure, pursuing wealth, and forsaking my own soul. Yeah, I've done that. The next point, cognition is a phantasmagoria because there is nothing beyond the sense perception of objects. Between the sense perception of objects and the perceived objects as such stands an irresolvable dichotomy. Since all sense perception of objects is subjective, any attempt to communicate about the perception of perceived objects is a double waste of time. So you can't really know anything. There's no sense in looking into truth because you can't know any truth. Every truth is relative. And you know what? Under that mindset, that's how tyranny begins to run wild. There are no higher principles of lawfulness in nature. Therefore, the method of hypothesis for discovering higher principles in nature is mere wasting time. As higher principles in nature are denied, there are, of course, no higher principles governing society. Natural law is a phantasmagoria. In society, there are only arbitrary social, political, legal settings, either tending in the direction of pragmatic conventions or more towards postulates like the strong rule the weak. And that's where we're at right now. Basically, whatever feeling someone has today, oh, homosexuality and transgenderism are normal, that's what we're going with. One can easily see that the core features of sophism mean the radical repudiation of the intellectual breakthroughs of early Greek science and philosophy, which the names of Thales, Anaximander, Heraclitus, and Pythagoras stand. They were the first to begin lifting the veil from the complex domain. They laid the very foundation of European science and philosophy. They pushed aside mythology as well as reductionist sense perception in their search for understanding the universe. They were working towards concepts of higher principles that are beyond or behind what is perceived by the senses. And they developed a method of hypothesis of being able to conceptualize such higher principles. So this all was rejected and repudiated by sophism. Thus, sophism is anti-Thales, anti-Pythagoras, and sophism is anti-Solon. And I don't think we're going to finish this article. So I think I'll get through the next, let's see, we got 1, 2, 3. I think what we'll do is the next show, we are going to begin with this. 3 more paragraphs, we'll go over that. But it's very, very, very important concept to understand. Because without understanding objective and subjective truth, your entire worldview is warped. And Zig Ziglar said, it is your attitude that determines your altitude, not your aptitude. So it doesn't matter how much you know, it matters how you look at things. And how you look at things basically determines your potential. And this is why so many people are never going to attain their potential because their attitude is off. If you can't determine what objective truth is, that's a problem. That's a huge problem. I need to learn to pause a little bit more. Once I get fired up on something, I just take off and I don't. I barely stop for a breath of fresh air. But I think what I'll do, we're going to resume. That sophism discussion. But before I leave you until next week, I want to say once again, thank you for the listeners. Thank you for the people who are listening to this on recorded. It is a pleasure being here with you. In the next few weeks, we're going to have guests on. And eventually, I think what I actually even want to do, I don't just want to have guests on who are favorable to our viewpoints. I would like to have guests on who radically oppose our viewpoints. That's what makes for an interesting radio program. So, and it doesn't really matter who it is. Until our politicians are held up to scrutiny which, of course, I don't know very many that would consent to come onto this show. But I can tell you, this is the reason why we have these problems, because we're not having interactions. The media is giving a false perception. They're giving everyone their attitude towards these politicians. They're telling them, Barbara Lee and Maxine Waters and President Trump and Biden and Rand Paul and Ted Cruz and all the rest of these senators and House of Representatives, they're all wonderful people. That's what the media tells us. And that's what you're at. The average American knows something's wrong, but they can't see exactly what it is, because you have the media lying to us all, propping up this Jewish financial system every single day, hour, minute, and second. The lies are being told. So until that stops, people aren't going to wake up. But yeah, I do want to get people who are radically opposed to this. And if you're listening to this and you disagree with what I'm saying and you would like to correct the record, you know, as long as you can avoid profanity and you could state your points and you're not going to be stand on lies when you're proven false, if that's the case, then I'll have to end the show or end your time on the show. The show will go on. It just will go on without you. You know, call in. There is no one in America that I am afraid to debate. Not a single person. Because even if I don't know something, and there's a lot I don't know, if I'm wrong, that's fine. That's how I learn. And if I'm right, well, great. Then I get to convince you of something and teach you. So either you're teaching me, and you know, that's the whole purpose of communication. It was for me to learn and for me to teach. If we're not doing that, what are we communicating about?
Thank you for listening to the Ryan Massano Show.
But yeah, let's
tune in every
here,
Saturday and Sunday
if
nights
you know
on SpeakFreeRadio.com for more of Ryan's takes on the eternal truths, traditional values, and divine insights. Remember, truth is hate for those who hate the truth. And Ryan and Speak Free Radio champion the truth. See you next time.